Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Perdita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Fan.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate it. If you don't mind, you can just scroll down to the bottom of your podcast app and rate the show and write a little review if you care to. If you think we've earned 5 stars, we'd appreciate it. It helps with the algorithm. If you want to connect with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. Thanks to the sponsors, Chemical Free Body, Tim James. Thank God they're making great supplements. I take Green 85 every single morning. I think it will help you. I think you should at least take a look at it and see what you think. It's vitamins that work. Supplements that work, that's a good place to start, right? That eliminates, I don't know, 50, 75% of the marketplace right there. So take a look at the detox bundle. That's something great. It's Green 85 in the morning, and it's a variety of capsules that you take. Doesn't upset your stomach or anything like that. But if you do it for 90 days, like the program tells you, you will have results. I had results that were so drastic, I had to go out and buy new shorts. They did not fit. And I don't have weight to lose. And I lost a bunch of weight anyway. So if it did that to me, I don't know what. I mean, I don't know what it will do to everybody else, but it had a profound effect on me. So take a look. It's called the Detox Bundle. And you can find it over at Chemical Free Body. And if you find something you like on the way out, you can use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money, of course. And thanks to Tim and the crew over there for making such great products that do indeed keep the chemicals out of it. And also big thanks to the folks at Legal Shield that have been doing this for half a century in the United States and Canada. They get the collective buying power of all of us little people and direct it towards a really great law firm in your area to get you access to lawyers at a very, very reasonable price, $1 a day. $30 a month will get you in the door. And if you're a Legal Shield member, you're going to get access to some a la carte items that you can add on. If you run a small business, you might want to pick up the small business plan. Or if you carry a firearm, they have documentation for that. If you are interested in ID Shield and credit monitoring and reputation management, and all, they've got all kinds of things over there. So I'll tell you what, best thing to do is go to the website, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com, and you can read about all of it there. It won't do you justice to have me try to describe it in a minute. Just go over there and check it out for yourself. It'll help you with, you can get all your medical directives, power of attorney, financial power, you know, financial power of attorney and will and testament, all that stuff, all the stuff that you've got to have. You've got to have that stuff. But boy, nobody wants to spend a couple $1,000s for them, for themselves, their spouse, you know, but you can do that all in the first month at Legal Shield. I don't care. Just go knock it all out. Get your money's worth. Pay itself off for the next 5 years. Seriously. So take a look. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to go for that. Well, I'll tell you, there has been there's been a push to make the general public feel that racism is the number one problem affecting the world in general, but also America in particular. Now, you know, listen, the racism has always been around, right? There's always going to be small-minded people that divide you up based on the color of the spacesuit that you're wearing, as David Icke would say. And that's one way to do it. I mean, we're all human beings. We recognize, you know, I don't see color. Oh, shut up. You do too. It's not about not seeing color. If you don't see color, then go get your eyes checked. All right. Everybody sees color. It's not about whether you see it or not. The question is, do you become a certified asshole because of the color of somebody's skin? That's the more important thing that we need to really worry about here. You need to be able to see color. I think we're hardwired to see people that look like us. It's not to say that you necessarily have to trust everybody that looks like you. That would be a really bad thing. But I think something internally, something in our in our programming has taught us that if you band together with people that look more like you, your tribe, then you have a greater chance for success, for living and carrying on. Now, I'm no anthropologist, and I'm not a scientist. I just play one on the podcast and everything. But listen, I think that there might be something to that. But in today's modern society, I think some of those characteristics that maybe helped keep us alive thousands of years ago, They put us in a situation now where they get flipped against us. They get weaponized, right? So your recognition that somebody is a different color than you is now somehow an indictment on your character. It's like, no, I just recognize that I have a white spacesuit on, and that other guy over there has a black spacesuit on. Can we be friends? Sure. Are you a decent human being? Or are you somebody that wants to subjugate the human race? Are you somebody that's acting like a clown? I don't give a shit what color you are. I care how you act, right? And same with me. Like, you want to hang out with the goofy white guy? Am I a nice person? Am I nice to kids? Am I nice to animals? Am I nice to other nice people? Yeah, of course. Am I a shithead to people that provoke me? Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'll come after you if you fuck with me. So I'm not a pushover either. So can you handle that? If you can, if you're cool, and we could be friends. But there's a real benefit to people in positions of power to make sure that that doesn't happen. You know, it's very important for the masses, the ants in the equation, to be fighting red ants versus black ants, right? We gotta shake up the jar and get those two groups fighting with each other. Because if they are fighting with each other, if we are fighting against everybody else that looks a little bit different from us, or speaks a different language, or has different customs than us, if we're fighting against them the whole time, then we can't prioritize where we should really be focusing our anger and frustration, and that is at the predator class that's conducting the social engineering experiment. So, you know, to the extent that they can keep us arguing with each other, that's energy wasted so that we can't use to defeat them. It's not black versus white. It's powerful versus the powerless, okay? So all the black people out there that are listening to this that think white people are the problem, listen, it's powerful people that are the problem. And I got news for you. They come in all colors, okay? There's plenty of powerful black people that hate your fucking guts too, I assure you. So it's not the color part. That's just an easy visual representation. It's harder to look at somebody and recognize if they have power. Well, maybe if they've got a costume on and a badge, then you might be mistaken to think that they have power, but they really don't. But I wanted to talk about this because it seems that racism has been a big topic lately. And so we have to address it. And it's racism, you know, by a thousand paper cuts. You know, you get somebody just complaining about, you know, first it starts with this, and then it starts to get a little bit deeper. And then next thing you know, you're really starting to despise the person, you know, the other side. And you have to be careful about that, because there's a lot of things that are being, a lot of, you know, information that's being manipulated in order to get a response from us. And the response that they want is that group over there is infringing on my turf and I need to take care of them. And they don't look like me. And their ideas aren't the same as mine, and they speak a different language, and they're probably plotting against me. And we, you know, so there's this manufacturing of tension in order to create racist problems. You see what's going on in Europe, in Western Europe, the influx of migrants. That is being done intentionally. That is done to provoke a response. That is 100% being engineered to happen. Now, is it, you know, get everybody deciding to all get on a boat and get dropped off at some little obscure Italian island all on the same day? What is that supposed to? That's intentional. That's trying to create problems between the current occupants and the new occupants that just got dropped off there. It's the same reason why the southern border is being left. Well, there's a multitude of reasons for why the southern border is being left open. But one of the reasons is because at some point in the future, they are going to weaponize the domestic, the how would I frame this? Americans that have been here for a while versus the illegal, undocumented people that have come across the southern border. It's going to be an us versus them fight at some point. They're gearing up for that. You can see the wheels turning. If you understand how the system works, and if you understand what benefits them, you can see this play developing a mile away. Okay. So let's talk about systemic racism. Some people call it systemic racism. If you look that term up online, it'll send you to Wikipedia and it will default to institutional racism. So they've decided that systemic racism and institutional racism are the same thing. I don't know that it really makes much of a difference. But here is how it is defined by Wikipedia, which is, you know, most definitely not the arbiter of truth. But it gives you context as to how the normies want you to understand this. They say that institutional racism is defined as policies and practices that exist throughout a whole society or organization that result in and support a continued unfair advantage to some people and unfair or harmful treatment of others based on race. Okay. That's what they're saying. It's throughout the entire society or throughout the entire organization. So when they accuse a corporation of being, you know, of suffering from institutional racism, that means that everybody in the organization is racist. It is throughout the whole organization. All right. It's frustrating to. It's frustrating to read this, because you know that it's you can feel it getting weaponized, and you can see that this is such a powerful tool for them. They're never going to give this up. If you think that, like, we're going to like all come together and support this and we're going to end racism, let me explain something to you. And I hate to piss on your parade, but there will never end racism. Not because the concept of racism is outdated, but because it is such a powerful tool for them. They need racism. They want racism. In fact, if it wasn't for racism, a lot of things wouldn't get done. They need that to say, those people over there are
not like you, and they want to take something from you. And then you go to those people over there and you say, you know, those people that they don't think like you either. If you want something, you need to take it from them. And they get both sides stirred up and fighting with each other. When the reality of the situation is, if you talk to a lot of people that don't look exactly like you and you say, hey, what do you like? What are you into? Oh, you're into that? Oh yeah, me too. You have kids? I have a kid too. How old's your kid? Oh, you love your kid? Yeah, me too. Holy shit. Yeah, we have that in common. I think if we have that, you know, oh, you like to watch baseball? Oh, so do I, man. Let's go. You know, like, when was the last time you were at a game? Oh, next thing you know, you have a lot in common with this person. Maybe not everything. Maybe you don't look the same or live in the same neighborhood or like the same sort of food. Maybe you haven't been, you know, living in this country for the same amount of time, but you start to notice you have things in common with those people. Well, they can't have that. It's very important that you have to see those other people as less than. If you can see them as less than, then they can get you to do things that you would never do to somebody that you can consider to be one of your peers, right? You would never enact the same sort of behavior that you're putting on this person. That person is less than you. That person is trying to do something to you. And if they can get you thinking that, then they've got you, right? And let me be clear. I do acknowledge that there's a certain percentage of people that are just dickheads. They're just racist. They've got their reasons. Some of them are low IQ. Some of them have gotten the shit kicked out of them by, you know, growing up when my dad was a white guy growing up in an all Mexican neighborhood, and he had his bike stolen a lot. And when I remember when I was a kid growing up, there's a time or two I heard something come out of his mouth when I was like, damn. But I have to realize that his upbringing was one of, I associate that group of people with kicking the shit out of me for no reason and stealing all of my stuff. So sometimes people feel the way they feel, not because, you know, they're just inherently bad people, but they feel the way they feel because of pattern recognition. Because every time I get my ass kicked, it's that same group of people that look just like them that beat the shit out of me. So you grow up and you have a problem with people like that. How can I argue with that? I would too, right? If we're being honest, I would too. If every day the black kid at school beat the group of black kids that beat the shit out of me, I'd grow up probably looking over my shoulders for the group that always beats the shit out of me. Would that make me a racist? Or would that make me somebody that is good at pattern recognition? Like, you know, it doesn't mean that every time you see that a group that looks like that, you're going to get your ass kicked. But you know that in the past, it's happened quite a bit. So look, we have to sort of understand that there's degrees to this whole thing, okay? There's degrees. There's some people that have grown up with a real defined reason for why they despise the other group. And it's a two-way street, right? It goes all directions with regard to colors. But then we also have to acknowledge something else, that racism is sometimes a very hard metric to measure too, because the intent of your words matters, right? You can say all kinds of, you know, racist terms, you know, you can use a hard R or a soft A, right? It's about intent. Okay. And you also have to know your audience, right? So don't go thinking you've got some sort of get out of jail free card with your words. You have to also know your audience. But again, intent matters. Now, be very careful when you're writing. As a writer, I have to keep this in mind, but be careful with your writing, because intent, sarcasm, tone, a lot of that doesn't follow. You know, the situation in which the words were said, the context, the group, where you were located, who you were with, are these guys your friends? And you can say something like that. And then you see it transcribed, written out. You're like, oh my God, did you say this? And you're like, well, yeah, but I mean, I was with my friends and we were all kind of joking around. Well, but did you say these words? You know? So context is extremely important. And people that want to divide you will say, oh no, context doesn't matter. No, you said this, therefore you're that. You know, the media is notorious for flipping the intent or underreporting the full context of somebody's words, right? You hear them talk about taking something out of context. Well, context matters. Shane Gillis, comedian Shane Gillis, has a funny bit about not being racist. You know, it's like, you're not being racist now. It's like, are you hungry? I'm not hungry now, but I will be tonight. Are you racist? You know, are you racist? I'm not racist now, but you know, that's subject to change depending on who cuts me off in traffic. You know, it's sort of his punchline. And it's funny because, you know, it's because stereotypes exist for a reason. Okay. And it's kind of funny. And like, you know, if you want to make fun of white people for eating mayonnaise sandwiches or black people for eating watermelon, or that's funny. Okay. Like, and for the record, I've never eaten mayonnaise in my entire life. So I've never had a mayonnaise sandwich. And I think watermelon is delicious too. So sometimes you get people that are just, that don't have a sense of humor and say, well, anytime you make fun of race, it's not funny. No, that's not true. Making fun of people's race is fucking hilarious. Let's not deny that, okay? It's the intent, though. It's when it changes from you just busting somebody's balls and then, but you know, and coming, having some fun with you, when it changes to, like, you know, when it gets personal, right? There's Truly Tasteless Jokes volumes 1 through like 30 for a reason, okay? Some of that shit is funny. And Shane Gillis's comedy, Shane, by the way, if you're I know you're a huge history fan. If you ever hear these episodes, I want to talk Civil War with you. Come on, let's fucking do it. There's an interesting thing that's been happening lately. And this is that white people, my people have been weaponized against ourselves. 53% of the time, white people say that other white people are racist, right? So they want to like point out who the racists are. So more than half of the time, if you ask a white person, are white people really racist? The answer is, oh yes, we're super racist. It's a weird cuck mentality. I don't really understand it. You want me to generalize an entire, and you want me to say what all white people think? Come on, that's dumb. So, it is fascinating to watch this performance art. This especially with the white people. I mean, it's cringy and unnecessary and totally retarded to watch white people apologize for being white, but it's also fascinating. It's a real interesting trick to get people to apologize for what the color of their skin is when they had no choice in the matter, and to get them to admit that the color of the skin that they have is the bad group of people. Look, there's bad people that are in every color. Okay. You want white people enslaved black people. Who sold them the slaves? Other black people. Do we want to have this debate? Do we want to have this discussion? Do we want to about who's the worst people out there? Who's been the worst over time? I mean, give me a break. This is dumb, but it's used as a tool to divide people. Again, if you can understand that the people in positions of power benefit from racism, because as long as I'm fighting this other guy because I don't like the way he looks and he doesn't like the way I look, it's just less hours in the day that I can be spending fighting the people that are actually ruining my life. By the way, that guy that looks different than me, he's not doing anything to me. He doesn't run the Federal Reserve. He's not printing a bunch of money and sending it to Ukraine. He's not doing any of that stuff. If I have a problem with him, I have a problem with him on a totally different level. But it's not color coded, you know. But BLM cucked white America, man. You know how like Trump broke Keith Olbermann's brain, and now Keith Olbermann is just a shell, an empty husk of himself. Those of you that don't know Keith Olbermann, he used to be a used to do sports in LA back when I was growing up. And then he got a job at ESPN with Dan Patrick and did Sports Center for a long, long time. And while he was talking about sports, he was fine. And then he got hired by MSNBC. And then he became a left-leaning guy with a show. And he was still kind of fine, kind of funny. And he was fired up, but he did it in a way that was, and then Trump came around and Trump owns Keith Olbermann. Trump is living rent-free in Keith Olbermann's head, and it's funny to watch. So he's broken. And I look at Keith Olbermann and I go, Trump broke him the way BLM broke white America. It just totally turned their brains off so that we started celebrating arson as mostly peaceful protests with a guy with a camera and a microphone with a straight face, a black guy, by the way, saying mostly peaceful protest as a store directly behind him is engulfed in flames. Mostly peaceful protest. And if you're a white person, you are not allowed to say that looks like arson, because if you said that, you are now a racist who hates the black community and is a white supremacist and probably voted for Donald Trump. So all of these to tag on associations get labels get put on you if you don't support the current thing, even if the current thing is mental illness disguised as stunning bravery and fairness. It's turned upside down. I mean, we've all been we watched this happen in the summer of 2020. We watched a massive shakedown of corporate America performed by BLM. That's all there was to it. You saw the NBA putting Black Lives Matter everywhere. You saw the NFL doing that. They had a big problem with Colin Kaepernick kneeling for back in 2016, and then all of a sudden in 2020, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are kneeling while wearing kente cloths in the Senate, showing that they stand with Black America. I mean, if that picture doesn't just encapsulate the state of affairs, I don't know what does. To see Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer taking a knee, pretending like they're fucking Africans. Can we just recognize that picture for what it? I mean, I have a hell of a sense of humor. So to me, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. But if I'm being kind of honest about it, it also was just a full-blown bootlicking subservience to the black community at a time when the black community didn't deserve that. They didn't. The black community did not have a crime against humanity committed against them with George Floyd. I'm sorry. They just didn't. You know, you pick a different hero. You know, pick a different hero for that one. But I'll tell you what, it was very effective. And BLM went around telling everybody, you know, it'd be a shame if you didn't support us. We're asking for donations. We're asking now. We're demanding later, right? And don't think for a second that Jonathan Greenblatt from the ADL wasn't sitting there taking copious notes about this, about how this whole thing worked. We're going to get to him in the second half of this because I've got some thoughts on that piece of shit. But nothing shaking on Shakedown Street, as the dead would say, except for the BLM grifters and Jonathan Greenblatt and all of these race baiters out there doing the Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson 40-year march. You know, march with us. I remember when they were doing the marches after the Rodney King beating. And that was horrible to watch that, man. And listen, I hate cops. So you get no sympathy. I mean, you're never going to see me saying, well, Rodney King deserved it because he was going 90 miles an hour and high on speed and, you know, and gets out of the car and, you know, all these cops want to fight. He shouldn't have been doing what he was doing, and they most definitely shouldn't have been doing what they were doing, and they should all be in prison. But then again, that's just my opinion. This is a BLM is a criminal enterprise. It's RICO in just with a different acronym. You know, they got mansions, they got development deals. Patrice Cullors, she got herself a development deal with Netflix. She bought a couple mansions. They needed these mansions for relaxation. They wanted to have a safe space, you know, a place. We wanted to have a place for people. We wanted to have a space for people to go in deep. Well, shut the fuck up. No, you didn't. You wanted to buy a mansion in LA, and you did. You bought a couple of them because you're grifters. Because you took all that money and you shook down corporate America and you didn't know what to do with it. And you certainly, you know, you can't fix racism by spending money on it. That's dumb. That doesn't work. So you took all that money and you spent it on yourselves. And then you hired your brother to be your, quote, security, and paid him $1.7 million to be your security force. I mean, grifter's going to grift, right? There will be white supremacists, though. Joe Biden has told us this. You can see it coming a mile away. Okay. They started talking about how domestic white supremacy is the biggest threat to America. Again, I'm not advocating for white supremacy. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think any supremacy based on race or religion is right. I think you open up a real can of worms when you start doing stuff like that. Because listen, I know plenty of shitty white people too, you know? And just because you're white doesn't mean you're at the top of the food chain here. So the idea that domestic white supremacy is going to be the biggest problem facing Americans is laughable. It's preposterous. Did white supremacy make your eggs cost twice as much as they did 2 years ago? No. Oh, domestic white supremacy. So they're not in charge of inflation? Who's making all the money disappear and go to Ukraine, into that money laundromat that you've got going over there? Was that white supremacy? No, as a matter of fact, you're sending money over there to finance white supremacy, if we're being totally honest, and that's kind of part of the role. So there will be white supremacy in the United States of America if they have to import it from Ukraine, okay? And they are. I'll tell you what. There is a great article that Whitney Webb wrote in 2022 that I know it's on The Last American Vagabond, might be on Unlimited Hangout as well, talking about this, about how there's a move by the CIA to finance and grow this army of white supremacists in Ukraine and then relocate them to the United States and have them cause problems under that. If you saw the nosebone guy from the Labor Day protest with swastikas and tattoos and everything, yeah, they arrest that guy. I don't know if you've seen the video. They arrest that guy. The police body cam footage, when they're running his name through the system, they go, what the fuck? This guy's popping up as connected to the FBI. It says to call the FBI office if you get this guy. Woohoo. Hey, buddy, who are you? You know, who are you? I'll tell you who he is. He's part of their plan to export from Ukraine white nationalism and import it into America to start this movement. So it's part of selling the white nationalist, constitutionalist, Trump connection problem. If you remember, there was an interview I saw. It was an impromptu interview. It wasn't like a formal sit down or something. It was like, they're just interviewing a guy who was doing a training drill with the FBI. He was like one of the field agents and everything. And they asked him like, oh, what are you guys doing? He's like, well, we're doing a training. He's like, well, what are you simulating? He's like, well, we're simulating domestic terrorism. They're like, oh, okay, well, what's the parameters of this training? And it's like, well, it's basically, we're going into this building and it's a bunch of people that are constitutionalists in there. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? The enemy are constitutionalists, are they? In your fake scenario. And this was like 2015, 2016, maybe. I don't remember the date exactly, but I remember seeing it going, oh, I know where this is going. I can see where this is going. You're already running drills simulating the rounding up of domestic terrorists, otherwise known as constitutionalists, blurring the lines between what those two terms mean to make it so that if you are somebody that says, hey, you know, we've got this constitution here, like it or not, like we should probably follow it. Like, in fact, we have to follow it. Anybody that says that equals domestic terrorists. It's like, really? That's quite a leap to make, but you can see the leap happening. And then when you read Whitney's article, you'll see it's not just speculation or not like, you know, oh, they may be doing this at some point. No, they're doing it now. That's who these guys are. You're just starting to see the first batch of it. And much like I've said in the past, I'll say it again. For those of you that read The Last American Vagabond and Unlimited Hangout and AM Wake Up, you listen to AM Wake Up, and it's like living 9 to 18 months in the future. It's like getting your news a year in advance. Because what will happen is when you read that stuff, a year from now, it'll be national news. And you'll go, I read about this last year. Who was talking about this? Ryan Christian was talking about this. Whitney was talking about it. Steve was talking. Yeah. Oh, these guys have been talking about it for a while. Or some article comes up and you go, oh my God, Steve, have you seen this? And I'll send it over to him. He'll say, we were talking about this in January. You go, God damn. You know, so this is happening. It's not accidental. It's being made to happen. And what you find is that there appears to be a supply and demand imbalance when it comes to racism. There is far more of a demand for racism by the powers that be than there is currently a supply. And so when you have a supply-demand imbalance, you need to increase the supply, which would explain why you radicalize and take white nationalists in Ukraine. You know, the Azov Battalion that we've been financing, the guys that pledged their allegiance to Stefan Bandera, the Nazi leader of Ukraine in World War II. You know, those guys, the guys that went ahead and just got all the tattoos and the lightning bolts, you know, and all that shit. Yeah, those guys. So when you have a supply-demand imbalance, you have to fix that. And if domestic white nationalism is going to be the boogeyman du jour moving forward, and there's just a lack of white nationalists to pull from, you've got to expand your search and maybe make it international, which is hilarious when you think about domestic white supremacy terrorism and you have to import people for it. Oh, it's interesting times that we live in. This is from the Washington Post. Biden calls white supremacy greatest terrorism threat as 2024 race heats up. Oh yeah, it's the greatest terrorism threat ever, right? White supremacy. A big amorphous term that could mean anybody. It could be anything. Again, it's this invisible enemy, or it's an enemy that blends in. It's a camouflaged enemy. You know, I guess invisible in that sense, that could be that guy. Maybe it's the guy next to it. Maybe it's that lady. Ooh, that old lady over there. She looks like she's seen some shit. She probably hates black people. You know what I mean? Like, how are you going to define this? Are we going to have to wear uniforms? That would be interesting. But let's talk a little bit about the business of racism, because the business of racism, baby, it's booming. You know, the governments are funding these NGOs into existence, like the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, CEO Sasha Havlicek, right? This is agenda-connected money flowing into these NGOs, like the Center for Countering Digital Hate. Have you heard of this organization? This is run by a guy named Imran Ahmed. And he runs it. He went after David Icke. That's how he first got on my radar a couple years ago. They started going after David Icke. And this was an organization that literally sprang into existence out of nowhere. And everyone goes, where are you getting your money from? And it like turns out it's based in London. And where are you getting your money from? It was all coming from Israel, of course. And so you start to go, well, this doesn't feel like a grassroots organization. It feels very AstroTurf to me, which of course it is. They went ahead and brought MP Damian Collins on their advisory board. Really? You're going to get to the bottom of digital hate by bringing in members of parliament? I'm sure that he'll get right to the bottom of that. Or maybe, just maybe, you bring in the MPs because they know how to navigate their way through the maze and labyrinth of government policies and regulations in order to find you the money that you desperately need, right? Right now, it's coming from Israel for Center for Countering Digital Hate. But eventually, it'll be coming from the UK government if it isn't already in some form or fashion. So get ready for that. But this group, the Center for Countering Digital Hate, you know, they're just all about digital hate, right? We just have to stop all this hate speech, as they go out and start destroying people's lives. They're the people responsible for the disinformation dozen. Do you remember that? That was a term that was brought into existence during COVID when they were talking about the doctors that were doctors and health industry practitioners that were speaking out against COVID. And this group, the Center for Countering Digital Hate, had literally pulled this number out of their ass. They said that 65% of COVID disinformation was coming from them. Really? 65%? Show me your math on that one. And I don't want Common Core math. Show me where you're getting 65% of it's coming from these 12 people. And then they got the White House involved. Okay. So if you think it's just some group, you know, another NGO complaining about all this stuff, well, it's all fun and games until they get the White House involved. And then what happened? They got deplatformed. The disinformation dozen. And not only that, the mainstream media enthusiastically cheerleaded for it. This is from Forbes, July 19th, 2021. The headline, "Deplatform the Disinformation Dozen." Calling for a removal of speech, are you? Forbes? Interesting policy. Don't let those people speak. Why are they? Are they filled with digital hate? Is it hate speech or just speech you hate? I'm going to mention who the disinformation dozen is in case you care. And hopefully they are formulating a lawsuit. I would hope they would be suing everybody, but I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Joseph Mercola, he's on the list. RFK Jr., he's on the list. They don't like him. Ty Bollinger, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. I watched her give a killer presentation at Anarchapulco in 2019 on the HPV vaccine that she said that they jokingly called helping to pay for Vioxx HPV after they had to pay a multi-billion dollar fine for Vioxx because it was killing people. You know, isn't that cute? Rizza Islam, Rashid Batar, Aaron Elizabeth, Sayer G, Kelly Brogan, Christian Northrup, Ben Tapper, and Kevin Jenkins. I know some of the names on the list, not all of them, but Disinformation Dozen has a nice ring to it, right? It's like the Dirty Dozen. They're just going to, oh, yeah, they're in there just disinforming everybody. All the things that they said were proved to be true. It was all true. It wasn't lies. Of course it was true. Again, you can spout nonsense, lies all day long. They'll let you. The minute you get on the truth, you get censored. Okay, so it's not hate speech. Let's just be clear about that. And the White House was, I mentioned, the White House was involved in this. They pushed Facebook for removal. And Facebook, quote, did not believe currently have a clear path for removal. That was from an email that was going back and forth with them. So even Facebook is saying, we don't have a reason to remove them. They got removed anyway. Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird that even your internal communications at Facebook say, we don't have a path, they haven't violated anything. And the White House says, get rid of them. And they get rid of them. Google banned Zero Hedge because of these pricks. I like Zero Hedge, man. Zero Hedge is a great place for news. I think they're very balanced. They cover a variety of things. But we can't have that. We can't have you being objective. You know, we can't have you going against the narrative by being objective. Again, it wasn't like Zero Hedge was coming out and saying, you know, don't take the vaccine. Zero Hedge's crime was being objective, was putting multiple sides and multiple opinions out there. Some of the opinions were, don't take the vaccine. But some of the opinions were, hey, here's what we're seeing at the hospitals. Here, you know, so it was a little of everything. But they couldn't, you can't have any cracks when you're trying to craft a bullshit narrative. You can't have somebody telling the truth. You can't even have somebody offering an objective opinion on it, because that chips away at the structure and foundation of the lie that they're trying desperately to protect, which is why you label people a disinformation dozen. So These are speech limiting organizations. That's why they are in existence. That's it. The Center for Countering Digital Hate doesn't give a shit about making the world a better place. Their only job is to limit your ability to speak. That's what they do. If they can get you to not talk about things, that is the victory. They're not fixing hate. They're not removing hate. They're not building bridges to bring black people and white people and Mexican people and Asian people together. They don't give a flying fuck about that. Their only job is to silence you from talking about things that go against the narrative. That's why they're in business, okay? So they silence the groups that expose the scam once they get big enough to have a voice. So currently, the Center for Countering Digital Hate and groups like that are going after the David Icke's of the world and the disinformation dozens of the world. They don't worry about me. You know, I'm no David Icke. I don't have the reach. They don't worry about me for now, right? But that's subject to change. It's like Shane Gillis says, I'm not racist now. Wait till I get cut off. Wait till they cut me off in traffic, right? You know, so let's talk about this. Let's move on. Southern Poverty Law Center. Have you heard about them? They should all be arrested for false advertising. Just the name, Southern Poverty Law Center. Oh, you care about poverty and you're a law center. If you're such a center concerned with law, how come you guys have so many lawsuits pending against you from people that used to work there suing you? Really? And you're getting sued all the time. You're out there working on behalf of the impoverished, are you? Or are you sexually assaulting people in your office? And stashing a shitload of cash offshore because of your grifts. Last time I checked, I think they said that they showed that they had over $160 million sitting in offshore accounts. There's a lot of money in racism. Okay. There's a lot of money in that. So these stop hate for profit NGOs just go out seeking outrage and then weaponizing, they seek outrage and then weaponize labeling people racist, you know, because if you can do that, you know, like, let's go scour through somebody's social, some new person comes on the scene, they decide to run for, I don't know, president, they decide to run for city council, and you go through their social media posts and you go, oh, I found that they said this one thing, then one time it was kind of maybe sort of racist, and let's hold them account for this tweet from 13 years ago, and you're, I don't know, what the fuck, what do you want me to say about that? You're a racist, do the dance, apologize. So do you not denounce racism? And you're like, oh, I denounce racism in all forms. And then you have to read the hostage letter, right? You have to give that speech, right? Because you can't be labeled as a racist, right? That'd be the worst thing in the world. If you know, but here's the problem. If you're a racist for voting for Donald Trump and you're a racist for saying that mostly peaceful protests were actually buildings that were on fire, and if you're a racist for saying BLM is grifting, and if you're a racist for saying that ADL is grifting, if you're a racist for saying all these things, then what does a racist really mean anymore? Like, how derogatory of a term is it? You've used it too much. You've called everybody racist. So if everybody's racist, how bad is a racist? You've diminished the meaning of it. And I would take that, a step further and say that you're now, it's not just racism that you've done that to, it's anti-Semitism as well. Okay. And we're going to get into that. That's because the hatred of Christians online is totally fine, but God forbid you say anything about Jews online and you're anti-Semitic and they're putting you, as a pallbearer at Adolf Hitler's funeral. You know what I mean? But again, if everybody's anti-Semitic and everybody, you know, if you've just called everybody at some point, who fucking cares? What difference does it make? What are you going to do? Label me racist and label me anti-Semitic? And then what? Do I just explode? What happens? Nothing. You gonna would you like to speak to the manager of macroaggressions and get me fired? Good luck. You gonna cancel me? You're gonna cancel me for having opinions that are inconsistent with your version of reality? That leads us to the reigning world champion of the victimization decathlon, the holders of a monopoly of suffering, and that is the Anti-Defamation League. You want to talk about a group of people that are reprehensible scumbags. It's the Anti-Defamation League. And for all of you Jews out there that think that the Anti-Defamation League represents you, I've got breaking news. They don't give a shit about you either. They are using you as a tool. Okay? They don't care. They do not care. They are exploiting any actual Jewish suffering. Since the organization was founded to protect rapist Leo Frank, okay? That's why the Anti-Defamation League was founded in the first place, was because a prominent Jewish person was arrested for raping a 15-year-old girl, and they devised a strategy to get them out by saying that everybody was being anti-Jewish, okay? So it sprung out of a horseshit situation to begin with. And that is actually the most fitting way for this organization to come into existence, because what you will find if you look back on the history of the ADO, and we're going to, is that all they've done is try to exploit people for their own gain. They claim to defend Jews, but they actually exploit them in order to justify censoring other people on unrelated issues. Okay, so you know. Don't you guys get tired of singing that same old song ever? It's the same song, but they use mafia-esque tactics, you know, and they watched what happened with BLM, and they watched that shakedown that was going on. And they said, holy moly, you know, what have we got? We can do this better than them. We can do this better than BLM. You know, people are terrified to be called racist. They're also terrified to be called anti-Semites. But the ADL is disloyal to their own people. They are hypocrites. They are not defenders of Jews. They exploit them. They're a parasitic organization. That's how they operate. They are a mafia. You might have noticed that Elon Musk has decided to speak out against them, while, I might add, simultaneously, his CEO, Linda, is tongue bathing them. So this good cop, bad cop show that's going on Twitter is something to keep your eyes on, right? He comes, and again, Linda Yacinda is having this conversation praising Jonathan Greenblatt and the ADL on the exact same day that Elon Musk is saying, I'm suing them. We're going to have to sue them for defamation for their RICO tactics, for trying to influence advertisers to boycott their advertising ad spending on Twitter, and that their ad revenue is down 60% in North America and Europe. And that the reason behind that is because the ADL doesn't like Elon Musk and said to Twitter, you know, back when the lefties were in charge, the ADL worked with Twitter quite nicely. And now that Elon's in charge, Elon says, you know, and I'm no Elon fan, but Elon says, well, we're going to do things differently. And they said, oh, no, you don't, because we're going to get all of your people, all your advertisers, we're going to collectively reach out to them and tell them that you're an anti-Semite, and that Twitter is being run by a Nazi. And that by definition, or guilt by association, if you run your Unilever, if you're Unilever, a multi-hundred-billion-dollar plus corporation that advertises plenty of consumer goods on Twitter, you're a Nazi now for advertising on a platform run by Nazis. So you understand how this works. That's racketeering. Racketeering and influence operation. That is RICO. So it's interesting to, sounds good. When Elon Musk says, I'm going to sue the ADL for, you know, for defamation for their RICO tactics, sounds good. we'll see what happens. Hey, but I'll tell you what, wouldn't be the first time that the Anti-Defamation League was sued and lost for defaming people. They lost a $10.5 million defamation suit in Colorado, the state where I live, for going around defaming people. I put it in my octopus book. I talked about them, about what they've done. They're a shakedown organization. You know, it's, it's funny. In 1993, there was an FBI investigation into the ADL, but something changed. Something changed after 1993 to now, because back in 93, when the federal government was going after the ADL, that has now changed to the ADL now trains the FBI. They train the FBI. Did you know that? Did you think about that? Think about that 180 that they've pulled to go from prosecuting and investigating the Anti-Defamation League to bringing them in to train their agents. They admit it, that the FBI works with the ADL, quote, every day, is what they said. Every day. This isn't some like, well, we had to take the ADL's out 90-minute online sensitivity training course. No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about embedded with the FBI. That when they say that the FBI works every day, they aren't kidding. Christopher Wray, the FBI director, was even part of it as a speaker. He's one of the speakers there. FBI Director Robert Mueller spoke at the ADL conference in 2005. So this has been going on for a while now. They are intertwined. The Federal Bureau of Investigations in America is now getting trained by the Anti-Defamation League. And the ADL spies on behalf of foreign governments. They get a bunch of money from Israel. You think they're not reporting back on what they find? You think that they're not taking orders from Israel as to who to go after this guy? Oh, this guy's talking about how Netanyahu might have been involved in 9/11. Go after him. He's talking about dancing Israelis. Go shut them up. Talking about Kroll Associates. They're talking about foreknowledge. They're talking about all kinds of things. They're talking about Chertoff. They're talking about dual Israeli citizens. They're talking about 9/11 and PNAC and the Zionists. Shut them up. ADL is Israel's bulldog. When people start talking and criticizing Israel, that's part of what they do. They want Trump support. I want you to hear this loud and clear, because this is a really important point. They want Trump supporters labeled as domestic terrorists. Okay, now I want you to think about that for a second. From a legal standpoint, what that means. The Anti-Defamation League wants Trump supporters to be legally labeled domestic terrorists. Now, after the Patriot Act was passed, the United States became a battlefield, a homeland. Okay? If you are a domestic terrorist operating in our homeland, on the battlefield, you have no rights. You can be disappeared. You can be taken to Guantanamo Bay. You can be black bagged. You can be held without trial. You can be held without access to your lawyer. You can be held without access to your family. You can be waterboarded while Governor Ron DeSantis oversees that. You have no rights. It's not just a derogatory term to call somebody a domestic terrorist. It is a legal description. And that is massively important on this. Okay. It's not like they want you to call Trump supporters a bunch of big dummies or a bunch of low IQ rednecks. Those are slurs. Domestic terrorist is a legally binding term that means something very different. And the ADL wants that. So again, just understand who you're dealing with here. And again, we go back to this supply-demand imbalance between racism and hate and anti-Semitism too. There's supposedly all this anti-Semitism everywhere. It's just pouring out of every crack and crevice in every big city. And yet the ADL cooks the books on the number of threats made against Jewish centers by including this one person. The majority of phone calls that are threats against Jewish centers are made by one particular Israeli teenager who is mentally ill. And the ADL knows this. He's responsible for most of the calls. They know he's no threat. He's a lunatic. And he's Israeli. But they leave him in the statistics because they need it. Because they need that. They need that supply of anti-Semitism. I tell you what, they're going to keep this up and they're not going to need to manufacture it. You're going to have plenty of people that are going to start to say, you know, I never really felt one way or another about the Israelis or anything. But now, after being called an anti-Semite for all these years when I haven't done anything, you know, now I'm starting to have kind of develop a little bit of a problem. So they may get the supply of anti-Semitism that they desperately want at some point if they continue behaving the way they do. And it'll be nobody's fault but their own. And of course, they'll use it to their advantage and weaponize it. So you have to be careful of stepping into that trap as well. They would love for you to hate them. They need you to hate them. Don't fall into that. I think it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that the ADL works very closely with all mainstream media in the United States. I know that's going to be a real shock to everybody, but they have to continue to push the narrative that that the Jewish people are always victims and that they have a monopoly on suffering and that any criticism of them is anti-Semitism. That's been decided that is the route that they're going to go with regard to you speaking about Jewish people. Look, half my friends I grew up with are Jewish. Great guys, great people, still friends to this day. They don't give a shit about any of this stuff. They don't care about this stuff. They don't have any sort of loyalty to Israel or anything like that. There's no anti-Semitism. They don't care about this. But this is used to weaponize people. This is used to get stuff done. It's a very effective tactic. And listen, the ADL loves a good old-fashioned shakedown, just like the mafia. Nice flower shop you got there. Be a shame if something anti-Semitic happened to it. You know? Hey, Adidas. Kanye said some things. Now you owe us money. And if you don't, well, you know, let's just say that we love a good boycott as well. You know, not against us, of course, not against them. They don't like that. You know, they don't like BDS. They don't like that. No, we don't like that boycott. But boycott Adidas? Boycott Kanye? Oh, yeah, we love that. Adidas gives a 7-figure donation to the ADL after that. It's a shakedown. Hey, Brooklyn Nets. Kyrie Irving said a movie, said that you should check out a movie. He said that on social media. So now, you know, you owe us money. Hebrews to Negroes is the film. Ever hear of the movie before? Neither have I. Ever hear of the Streisand effect? Makes you want to see what all the fuss is about with the movie. Oh, by the way, in less than 24 hours, the Brooklyn Nets paid $500,000 to the ADL. And Kyrie Irving paid $500,000 to the ADL as well. Isn't that funny? The ADL threatened Iceland. The balls on these people. They're out threatening entire countries, you know. So that's what they do. They have a 9-person team that is working solely on re-editing Wikipedia entries to make sure that any criticism against them, especially, or any of the people that they are hired to defend is, you know, any of that criticism is deflected or misdirected by changing Wikipedia posts. And listen, they also, I mentioned that they were going after Elon Musk with Twitter. You know, the reason why Elon Musk is so concerned about this and the reason why he's coming over the top with this alleged lawsuit that he's talking about doing, which has not been filed as of the recording of this, is because he saw what they did to Facebook. He saw what the ADL did to Facebook. The ADL got 800 companies to collude and agree to pull their ads off of Facebook until Facebook agreed to ADL's new policy. So who's really got the power here? You know, accept our demands or we'll tell these 800 companies that you're a goose-stepping, Zieg Heiling C-level executive in your board of directors meetings, that you guys are plotting ways to, you know, for the final solution during your board of directors meetings. That's what they'll do. So they're the speech mafia. And they use mafia tactics. They're evil personified. The ADL. They're doing a disservice to Jews. To Jews that have actually suffered. It's a fucking shame. Right? To people that have actually been defamed. But, you know, when you're the ADL, you have no soul. When you're Jonathan Greenblatt, you have no integrity. You're just a shark out there looking for blood in the water. And you know what? The ADL seems to find it everywhere they look. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions, or you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
Using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.